On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we react to Chapter 1 of the CBA negotiations, MLB's proposal, the PA's proposal. What does any of this mean when we're still talking about this in May? Then we talk about Christopher Sanchez. He is not allowed to run in over a month. That seems pretty good. Where does he stack up in a loaded NL Cy Young race before we give you the good, the bad, and the ugly on this wonderful Friday on Baseball Barbacast?
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that saw the Leaning Tower of Pisa this morning. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schuster-Mern. I'm in Italy on vacation with my wife, and yet the pull, the draw of the collective bargaining agreement negotiations was too strong for me to stay away from a microphone. And so I am here this morning to talk bargaining with you.
You know, for the last, 6 months, ever since we started barreling towards these conversations, a common refrain is, oh God, like, we're going to have to talk about this. But as you mentioned, maybe Jake has actually been eager, just itching to discuss these negotiations all along. And that's why you just had to hop on the mic here from Italy.
I'm strolling through the cobblestone streets explaining the salary floor to my wife, you know, and she's like, can you please talk about this with someone else? And I said, I know just the person, Jordan Schuster-Mern. Anyway, folks, that is our opener today, talking labor. We have our goalposts. That is the significant of this week's labor CBA negotiation scuttlebutt. Both the league and the union submitted formal proposals for the first time in this negotiating cycle. Neither of these proposals will become the economic structure of our sport. As they are, these are the extremes of the negotiation, of the discussion, of the bargaining that is going to transpire between now and whenever there will be Major League Baseball games after 2026. But what we have are the ends of the spectrum, right? We know that if there is a salary cap, probably, it will be with a floor of $171 million. It will certainly not be lower than that, probably. We know the two ends of these extremes. And, oh, Jordan raising his eyebrows. Now, there's a lot is going to happen. We are nowhere close to the end. I feel no better nor worse about baseball occurring in 2027 than I did a handful of days ago. And so as we kind of handicap this conversation for today, what's important to understand is what we did get. And that is what we got. We have goalposts.
Yeah, and we can talk about some of the specifics in terms of the numbers, the broad strokes of the structures that have been presented from both sides and what they're sort of seeking to acquire in these talks. And the headliner is very simple. MLB is asking, pushing, publicly declaring an intention to institute a salary cap for the first time in 30 years. This was not something that when we did this 5 years ago, what? MLB was like, we're going for a salary cap, right?
Wait.
Yeah.
Have they wanted a cap this whole time?
Well, that's an interesting question, right? Because
I didn't see this coming at all.
They have not formally asked for it until now, right? So that is what makes these at least a little bit different. But to me, for the purposes of this conversation, and they're the goalposts, and this is appropriately the opener. These are the opening statements, really, from both sides. That is not just to each other. I think the other funny thing about this whole dynamic is that they're submitting them to each other, but really they're submitting them to us because they are sharing them with everybody. Because part of this whole process as we go through this, both from now until it expires on December 1st, but then also once we all expect the owners to lock the players out and really, you know, dig into to what these negotiations are actually going to be when the stakes start to be raised with the 2027 season approaching, which is conveying their goals to not just each other, but to everybody out there. There's a reason we have the details of these.
Conveying their publicly stated goals. And I think that is an important distinction here. Because what are their goals? What are, like, let's be real. Okay, maybe I'm being too cynical. What is the goal of the union? To ensure that its body, that its players get paid more money effectively. What is the goal of the league?
That's the gig. That's the gig. Well, for
the league, it is to ensure that the owners are making more money and the league is making more money. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Whatever either of these sides are saying to us in public, whatever proposed altruism they are conveying, I am going to decide to see through that for now because I don't really believe them, where they're both using the idea of fairness and an even playing field and blah, 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 blah. Sure. But in reality, you are trying to enrich a certain segment of the baseball population. And I think that we, as the capital M media, our job in this is to, and I've said this before, is to act on behalf of the fans and to try and advocate on behalf of the fans and think about this from a fan perspective. Because at the end of the day, like, Jordan, I don't give a crap whether the players make more money or the owners make more money. Like, that is irrelevant to me. And I'm going to say the same thing 1,000 times over the next couple of months. I don't care. And like, I've had to say this to players before. I don't know if you've ever had this conversation where like they're like complaining about some labor thing to you. And you're like, you're making 3.7. You're making $11.2 million. Like, I don't care if you make $11.7 million. I don't care if you're making $500,000 more. I want to watch baseball. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to watch baseball. And so right now I'm at a point where maybe I'm entering this too cynically, but like all of the things that the sides are saying about making the game better, they can kind of like, they can keep that to themselves at least for now, because we know that's not what this is actually about for them.
Sure. I'm with you on that. I still do think that then, yes, we want baseball to happen, obviously. And I think most fans want baseball to continue to happen. So as we project forward into the premise of, oh my God, are we going to miss games over them fighting over money for both sides? Then yeah, that becomes much more real. However, at this stage, I mean, what is the purpose of talking about any of this right now, right? I think that's what I'm trying to kind of talk through it and think about. Mm. And that's why the positioning and the PR is relevant. And the very...
Yeah.
You know, the specifics of the economics within these proposals, the cap being proposed by MLB saying, okay, great, we're going to have a ceiling of around $245 million and a floor of around $171 million. Now, does that include player benefits, which is another $20 million or so? No, it doesn't. Or I guess it does. So that kind of inflates or makes those numbers a little bit fuzzier than what they actually look like, where you'd say, oh my God, $171 million payroll, where there's all kinds of teams are below that. And all these teams are suddenly going to go up. That sounds great. Look at all these teams that would come down to $245 million, which is still a lot. To me, the specifics of the economics, and I would also say from a PR standpoint, clearly MLB has it much easier as to convey what they're trying to do and what they think it is for, or what they're conveying is for in terms of competitive balance, compared to the players, where if you look at the details of the players' proposal at this stage, and understandably, because they're talking about a lot of specific, minute nuances of player compensation, if you're an average fan reading through each of these proposals, the MLB one makes a lot more sense and addresses something more directly than the players in a way that impacts fans, I would think. Which is also something that MLB has at this stage.
Yes. However, you know, to dumb the upcoming war down, the league wants a new economic structure. They want to overhaul the existing one, and the union would prefer the status quo. Now, the union is not going to submit a proposal to the league or to the public. That is the status quo. Because that is negotiating against yourself, right? that if the league is saying we want $10 and the union is saying we want two, but they're already at two, like it doesn't make any sense, you know?
Right.
And so that's why you have this proposal from the union that is further than what we've, you know, further to the union side than what we have now, and probably significantly further to the union side than what we'll end up with. Right. I think that is kind of crucial to understand.
Well, and that's why, you know, I think Jeff Passan's summary of both sides here at ESPN is helpful. And also the first sentence kind of sums up the whole thing, and why also discussing these as negotiations at this stage is almost pointless. Because as he says, the gap between the sides is not just enormous, it's fundamental. They're not even talking about the same things right now, because MLB is already talking about a cap system. And as we know, for the entire history of the MLBPA, a cap system has been a complete non-starter, so that they are they haven't even considered or started to discuss anything within the ideas of a cap system. So they're not even talking about the same thing at this point, which is to be expected at this stage, where we are still months away from the CBA expiring. But also why I do think how this season plays out and fan sentiment and PR is going to be a relevant part as we move forward here. Because the commissioner has already started going on, whether it's McAfee or you know, speaking to reporters, leaking stuff to reporters through the league, the way that we've already had official statements from both sides, but particularly from the league spokesperson, you know, like Glenn Kaplan saying, okay, this is what they're saying, and then let me put this in our terms and why you as a fan should think that that is bad, right? Because MLB is placing their entire perspective
league, and it's rebuttal to the union's opening statement was like, okay,
saying, look at the Dodgers.
How can we say Dodgers? How can we say Dodgers?
Exactly. Right? And like, and to that
and
point,
you are going to hear that so much. Oh my God, it's going to be like Dodgers, 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 which is both exhausting and intelligent as a strategy.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Yes. And also why it will be interesting how this season actually plays out, because the data that they are pulling from, if you're thinking about it from the lead perspective and you're saying, okay, how can we convey to fans, or we think we're speaking on behalf of fans, even if, as I agree with you, we know the reason any numbers that they came up with, whether it's this starting point or where we end up, is going to be based on calculations that they're making internally that's saying, okay, great, this is how we can make more money. This is how we can enhance our franchise values, stabilize our franchise values.
No one is advocating for the fans.
not just advocating for the fans.
Neither of these sides are advocating for the fans.
It's not just that. This is the part I really cannot possibly wrap my mind around. I can understand seeing fan sentiment on social media being like, oh my God, yes, I want a cap. I want my small market team to feel like they have a chance in the postseason. All those things, we're going to have versions of those conversations. We've heard from listeners that feel that way. I respect that. I'm fine with all that. The thing that I truly will never understand is the early responses from people being like, oh my gosh, what a generous offer from these owners. This is exactly what the league needs. They are, the kindness of their hearts are suddenly realizing, you know what? You're right. We should have our payrolls up at $170 million because that's the right thing to do. Do you think that they, when they put this proposal together,
these are ruthless,
that was the driving force? They were
people.
Like, we knew.
All of these people are billionaires. They are billionaires because they will crush you in an instant. Okay?
Right.
These are, like, who are then doing nice charitable things with a lot of their money because, one, maybe they are, you know, good people deep down, and, like, they also, you know, reputation washing, whatever, blah, 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 blah. They are not looking out for you. That is not what this is. I don't think many people listening to our show are like, oh my God, Jerry Reinsdorf, thank you so much. Like, no.
Right.
That is not, I think our fan base is probably a little bit.
I agree.
You know,
I agree. However, like, that is something we are constantly going to be combating, which is evaluating these proposals. While I agree with you, I just want baseball to be played and we want baseball. Baseball's doing really well. At some point, we are going to have to evaluate these proposals in some sort of level of, okay, right, this sounds fair, this makes sense, this is in economics that work, whatever. I know that's not fun and not our expertise. But when you compare that to just how fans are actually feeling, ones that do listen to our show and don't listen to our show, and what that actually means, that is going to be something we're constantly trying to balance, I think.
Sure. And something the league said that I have kind of a out loud question about is, the current system doesn't work. And I think when you think about it not working, it's worth saying it doesn't work for whom. Okay? It doesn't work for whom. The current system works for Juan Soto. Okay? That's a fact. I think the league would agree yeah. that the current system works for Juan Soto. The current system works for the Dodgers. The current system works for Dodgers fans. Frankly, Jordan, the current system works for us. I like the current system. I like my job. I really like the sport. I like covering it as it is. I don't really want to have to learn about a cap. I don't want to have to be one of those people who covers the NBA and they're talking about aprons all the time. No.
True.
Aprons for me, that's a kitchen-based thing. I don't want to bring that into work. Okay?
Yes.
The other thing that was on my mind is, who does this work for? I would argue that more people than, like, the system is currently working for more human beings than it ever has because baseball's never been so popular from a raw numbers perspective. Like, am I dumbing that down too much? Like, is there an if it ain't broke, don't fix it part of this where if the league is touting how great everything is and how many people are watching and viewership is up, blah, blah, blah. Then, like, why are we drastically reshaping the way that the sport works? Is that because, okay, in 25 years, maybe there are some real issues that need to be fixed and like the payroll gap is significant, blah, blah, blah. But like, it's worth, like, things are, status quo is pretty great. Like,
yeah,
sports do pretty good, I agree. I think.
Well, and that's another part of the league's messaging that's going to be interesting. And I do, this would be kind of a, maybe a vague prediction that I feel like from a messaging standpoint, we're going to get to. I do wonder right now, MLB is very coming out, as you mentioned, to say Dodgers, 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 imbalance, imbalance, imbalance. Look at the payroll, payroll, payroll. MLB, we're just doing what the fans want. We're just trying to fix what fans are telling us we need to fix. And I also wonder if at some point they're basically going to draw the line between, hey, you know what? We fixed all this other stuff in the game that has been better, that the fans wanted. They wanted the games to be faster, yes. And they wanted all these things, and we changed it, and baseball's doing great. But I mentioned that because on one hand, I do think that that'll become part of the messaging from the league's perspective. I also think that as we zoom even farther out, this is where any column you're going to see about this and anyone you talk to about this will still end up at. And this will be much more relevant once we get into the offseason as games approach and we start thinking about the real risks of missing games, which is that, as you say, baseball's doing pretty well. And at some point, while because the way this works, you are negotiating every 5 years. And so both sides are seeing this as an opportunity to ask for more and to bargain for more and to negotiate for more and to make it better for the players and to make it better for the owners. If you're the owner side, you do have something that is going really well right now, and trying something so extreme that is going to put that at risk, everybody loses. And that includes the owners, that includes everything. And so
yeah,
there is going to become a point that probably both sides are going to realize, wait a minute, what we are pushing for is putting at risk something much larger, which would be missing games, losing fans, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the dance they're going to play in January and February. It's still May, and there's baseball going on, and baseball's still doing pretty well. We'll see how this season unfolds, because I think that's another part about this. If we have a Rays Brewers World Series, it's going to be harder for the league right off of that to say these teams are cooked, they have no chance. If the Dodgers win again, you can be damn sure the Dodgers are going to be in every single possible messaging. So, and you can also be damn sure that fan sentiment is going to be tilting more in the league's favor.
Sure. And let's be clear, the truth, as it always is somewhere in between. From a parity perspective, making the playoffs, there is not a really strong correlation between payroll and regular season win total, right? Yep. You can get in to the tournament with a payroll of 100 or even under 100 million.
Yeah.
And the union is going to use that as an argument over and over again. The league is going to look at it through a different lens and say, well, the Dodgers are the ones winning two in a row. We've had big market teams win, what, the last like 7, 8, 9, not since the Royals as a big market team won the World Series. Mm-hmm. Having MFers at their peak is what wins you a World Series, and only the big teams have those players. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference. That's the thing that the league's going to say. The truth, somewhere in between, as it always is. Two more points before we take a break. One about timing and one about Rob Manfred's legacy. I'll start with timing. An optimistic fact is that this has started way earlier than it did last time. Okay. Mm-hmm. During the negotiations in 2021, heading into 2022, I believe the union made a proposal around May, and the league, the owners did not respond with an actual real proposal until August. Mm. Until August, which was a bargaining strategy, right? To kind of wait them out. That's embarrassing. I am slightly encouraged that this is starting earlier. Now, if you were Deborah Downer, you could say, well, Jake, they're so fundamentally far apart that, okay, great, they're talking now, but like, what's the point of them talking if they're not talking about the same thing? And to that, I would say, fair, but at least we're starting the process earlier and that there is less obvious procrastination going on. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. I'll just mention this now on the point of how long it took to go back and forth, 5 years ago. One thing I'm very curious about is how frequently we're going back and forth here, because it seems like we had the first thing come out from the PA, and then boom, we had the response from the league saying, hey, we want a cap. Here's the vague system. And then we did get a response from Bruce Meyer, president of the PA. He did put out another statement. I'm curious, with every like chapter of this, every episode of these back and forths publicly, does each side try and get the last word, right? They're not just going to go back and forth in perpetuity, because at some point you are exhausting.
Yeah.
It's just not sustainable. So I don't know when we're going to do this again, whether it's going to happen in 3 weeks, in 3 months.
I want it to feel December, like ping pong.
I don't know.
Not snail mail. Let's like,
yeah.
Even if you're not really saying anything, like, let's go. Let's get a move on. Like, whatever you're arguing, the only difference is time. And I know time leads to desperation and the prospect of games being real, but you're going to feel that way in 6 months, like whatever, like let's go. And so at least from that perspective, I feel slightly encouraged. Last point about Rob Manfred's legacy. Mm. Rob Manfred, from what I've heard from people that know Rob Manfred, is apparently like a decent hang. Mm-hmm. I've never seen that personally. And I think that Rob Manfred's persona publicly is not that. And he has been made fun of a lot for saying a lot of silly, stupid stuff during his tenure. Some of which is just par for the course for being the commissioner. Some of which is his own doing, right? I think that if you evaluate Rob Manfred's stint as commissioner right now, it is a huge success. And it is important to remove like the vibe of the guy from, you know. And this is a point I've made about presidents. It's like, I don't want my president to be someone I can get a beer with. I want my president to be like a policy robot. Like, you're the president. You shouldn't be necessarily a good hang. So like, whether or not Rob Manfred is like good in front of a microphone, I don't care. He's kind of crushed some stuff. The rule changes are good. Baseball's in a healthy place. The World Baseball Classic is awesome. Like, Rob Manfred, good. However, legacy hinges on this. It hinges on this. If there are any missed games, it sullies all of that stuff. It really does. And like, those are the stakes for how we remember and think about this person in our sport. And whether or not that's something he cares about, I don't know. The idea that he's going to allegedly step away in 2029, does that impact his willingness to get this? Like, is he willing to cede more because it won't be his problem? Or does he want to draw a lot? Like, okay, in 2029, he's not going to have to field phone calls from owners anymore, right? Yeah. Rob Manfred, if he really does truly care about the sport and the future, like, he has a chance to do the funniest thing ever. You know what I mean? Like, I know that's not exactly how it works here, and that negotiation, right? He's speaking on behalf of the owners and the owners vote, this stuff. I get it. But what I'm saying is, because there's a ticking clock on Rob Manfred's tenure, it does create a different dynamic here. Now, the same is true probably for Bruce Meyer, who's running the side for the union, who is interim and maybe wouldn't, this is probably his last go here, but like, he's not as major of a character as Rob Manfred is. And so in my mind, I'm fascinated to see how and if the end date influences the way that Manfred handles this particular negotiation.
Yeah. And you can say that the rule changes and everything is, That's also a big part of legacy. We know expansion is a goal of his that he's basically said he wanted to have a plan in place for before he leaves. That's another
and then the
big
TV deal is the other big one.
And then the TV deal. So, there's still a lot going on, but I agree with you that still the very basic premise of if you miss games, let alone
you're the owner
a lot
who
of games. If you're an owner who missed games, like that is just something or that
the,
is
not the owner. You're the commissioner who missed games.
Yes.
You're the commissioner who missed games. That's what you are.
It is a good question of and something we're constantly having to deal with, which is okay, you're the commissioner. What is your job? What are your goals? What is your mission? Okay, you're the steward of baseball. And we've seen that through the rule changes in some senses, and that's been a positive sense. However, we also know that the gig is to keep the owners happy, make the owners money. And so you have to see everything that he says through that lens as well. I think the last thing that I'll say before we take a break is just there's going to be a lot written much more analytically about the economics of these two proposals and which side is actually more fair or makes the owners more money or makes the players more money or what class of player
care.
Would help be helped by this. There are some interesting things that can be written. I certainly do not care to dive into that right now on our podcast because the reality is when baseball's still going on, we want to talk about baseball, which is why we're going to stop the segment here soon and talk about Christopher Sanchez.
Right.
But in these early stages, especially during the season, we're going to try and keep it big picture about the messaging. And then when we have to, because there's no free agent signings and there's nothing else to talk about, we can dig in more to the numbers.
It's interesting to dream about. I don't read science fiction in my free time. You know, I read narrative nonfiction because I'm a loser and maybe my imagination sucks, but like I am not going to spend time, particularly on my vacation, looking at the specifics, looking at the I saw some tweet that was like, how many teams are below and what does it mean for player benefits? And I was like, you know what? I'm going to have a glass of Lambrusco and not think about that
especially,
right now, which is my privilege and my right at this current point in time.
100%. And especially when, as you pointed out initially, these ain't the numbers we're going to end up with in either direction. So doing too much calculation now is not much good. But anyway, not to stop anyone who enjoys doing those numbers. I totally get it.
Go nuts.
All right. That's
your right.
That's where we're at for now. I know we're doing our best here with this. We'll continue to cover it. But baseball season's still rolling. So I'm excited to get back to
the field. It's still rolling. But just one last thing. Okay. We're going to try and have a good time with this, man. As we move forward, I would love to never talk about this again. Like, I want to talk about the sport. That is what fills us up. That is where we butter our bread. That is what the listeners want to listen to. But we're going to have to talk about, this is the biggest story in the sport. We understand that. You folks understand that. We're going to try to do it with a tone that is like, this is not life and death. Okay, we're not talking about the war. And so as we talk about this moving forward, I do think it is just important to consistently remind ourselves that the stakes, though they feel so big because it's the future of baseball, it's the future of baseball, you know?
Well,
and so, I think that is just, we do a baseball show. That's what it is. I get it. Just something to keep in mind.
I also trust that we'll be doing some more substantial reporting that is more substantive, but for the purpose of the podcast, we're trying to have a good time. We're trying to, keep people informed, but also, have this be something that's enjoyable to listen to. So anyway, we're gonna take a break. When we return, Christopher Sanchez has thrown how many scoreless innings in a row? Oh my goodness. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's talk about baseball. There is a phenomenally impressive streak going on right now. We need to talk about it. There's no H in Christopher Sanchez's name. There is one R, though, but maybe there shouldn't be. Maybe it should be Christoph Sanchez, because this gentleman has not seen an R for quite some time. The Phillies left-hander has now tossed 44 and two-thirds consecutive scoreless innings. He threw 7 shutty on Wednesday against the Padres to push that streak up to 44 and two-thirds. That is the seventh longest streak in the live ball era. So that's since 1920. You'll just, you know, this is, that's baseball. Longest ever, I believe, by a left-handed pitcher. He's had five straight scoreless starts. He's been scoreless in the month of May. Over that span, three walks, 45 strikeouts. This is unbelievable what Christopher Sanchez is doing.
Longest ever by a left-handed pitcher, just like, that kind of just shook me. I didn't like totally process that as being part of this. That is incredibly impressive. Let's just hit the specifics of the streak here, and then we can circle back to Sanchez, the pitcher, and what he's doing well. I know he's someone that you've watched a lot of. You've written about him. You've profiled him.
Love this guy.
Let's just review his season and then also just talk about the streak. So this stretches back to, so he's got five consecutive scoreless starts. Eight innings, seven innings, nine innings, eight innings, seven innings. So that's all in the month of May, which is just like, oh my God. And then you add a couple more innings from his start against the Giants on April 30th.
He allowed two in the first?
He allowed two runs in the first. And then, yeah, he, you know, kept it going from there. So you add on a few innings from that, and that's how you get to 44 and two-thirds. You mentioned it's the seventh longest. I mean, he could very easily vault up to third, like very easily, with another scoreless four innings. The next four names on the list are Bob Gibson. He was pretty good in 1968. That was a pretty good season.
Good.
47
good
innings. Zach Greinke, 2015, 45 and two-thirds. Carl Hubbell, 45 and a third. Sal Magley at 45. He's at 44 and two-thirds. So again, just four more innings of scoreless baseball.
He's at number three.
He's at number three. Then it gets a little bit more difficult. Because up at the top of this leaderboard, famously for a very long time, Oral Hershiser, 1988, 59, and then Don Drysdale, 1968, 58. So we'll get there when we get there. But the point is Sanchez is very much within range of climbing into the top three of this. A streak that, like, this is, like, this is one that has come up. We've had, of course, we had Greinke. Can't remember, there was another pitcher who had one, I think that was like 30 plus innings in the last few years, and we've seen, we've talked about it. This is one that, like, I do like. I, this is a record that I do
love,
feel like
this
comes up, and
love
it is fun
record
to, and I think we've also had versions of it with relievers that are less sexy, and of course now relievers are better than ever, so it's not as cool. But to have a starting pitcher be this dominant, and also I should mention, I just wanted to make sure I included this, Christopher Sanchez was off to a very strange start to his season. He had two outings
like
where
the
he had
Phillies
allowed
were
11. Yeah, the Phillies, like the Phillies were. He had allowed 11 hits on April 7th. He allowed 12 hits and six runs against the Cubs on April 23rd, right before this streak started. And when you looked at the way he was pitching and you looked at the BABIP and like some of the peripherals, you said, oh my God, he's getting unlucky. Like, Christopher Sanchez is fine. He's going to revert back to being a really good pitcher. And that's what happened. But now it's gone so far in the other direction where it's like, oh my God, this is one of the great stretches of pitching we've ever seen.
So for to pull this off, to get to 44 and two-thirds scoreless, you need to be excellent and you need to be lucky. You need to be both. And he has certainly been both. He has struck out a lot of guys, but he has also benefited from some very nice, you know, sequencing and some good defense. And like, but that's part of living as a pitcher. I went back and watched the whole start he had on Wednesday against the Padres. And, you know, there was a ball that Manny Machado got a lot of that I thought was going to go out, that died at the wall. And Justin Crawford made a great catch, you know, to rob extra base hit. Like, and there was times where he's got like a runner first and third, one out, and he's, you know, gets out of it. And like, that's what made this. Even watching after the fact, like, I was obviously not watching this live. I'm in Europe. I went back and was like, oh, I want to see how the Sanchez start unfolded. It is fascinating theater. The can he keep the scoreless streak alive as like the vehicle for tension? Because with a no-no or a perfect game, it ends in a moment and you're done. Like a little bloop or a flare and it's over. You know, Ramon Laureano hits a double down the line off Christopher Sanchez with no one on. And you're like, okay, now we go. Like, oh, now there's, we got traffic.
That's like,
but
the start
also,
of the tension.
Any pitch, it's the start of the tension. But then also any pitch could be a homer, right? Sure. And so it's like, there are all the, it's like a ball, two outs, runner on second, ball in the gap. Can the guy run it down? He does. And we had like, it just builds on itself in such an interesting way. Where also everyone kind of knew what was going on, at least like the Phillies fans behind their dugout. That's going to be pushed to an even greater degree when he comes home and makes his next start, I think on Tuesday or Wednesday, against the Padres again. Okay. Mm. Now that is a good thing. People are always like, oh, well, you saw them last time. They figure them out. Like, I don't know if someone smarter than me at FanGraphs could like write something about whether that's true, because we see this all the time now because of the new schedule. Like, you just fit, you see pitchers facing teams in quick succession all the time. Like, I would be curious to know who that actually benefits. But if I'm Christopher Sanchez, I would rather face those crappy, crummy Padres lineup twice in quick succession than most other lineups in the sport. Well, and so, yeah, like, he's got a real shot here to at least get to third place.
Well, the schedule is certainly friendly to him, considering the Phillies are about to play the Dodgers, right? Yeah. So, like, that works out. Yep. I mean, regardless of who he is going to face, whether this the Padres facing them again is good or bad because their offense sucks or they just saw him, like, whatever. Certainly feel better about him keeping this going without having to face the Dodgers this weekend. I think, again, and just getting back to Sanchez as a pitcher, this is something that I talked a lot about last season as he really had this just ridiculous breakout. And it's honestly something I talk about with a lot of pitchers who I particularly appreciate. And you mentioned, what is the recipe for something like this to be this good? Christopher Sanchez has been an elite ground ball pitcher for a long time and now has added strikeouts in a way that it is just, there is so little good happening against Christopher Sanchez when you are suppressing amount of slug. Yeah, when you swing, and there's not a lot of good happening with Christopher Sanchez, and he's throwing enough strikes now that he's not just putting guys on base and they're getting around on ground outs and sac flies and whatever. And that's how you get a run like this, is he's leading baseball in ground ball rate and he's top 10 and top 7 or 8 in strikeout rate. And that is a lethal
combination. It's just three pitches. I love the watch because his ability to dot that sinker bottom rail and below and then work the change off of it is so fun. He had a couple sequences where he would just be like, sinker in, foul ball, sinker in, foul ball, change up, middle down, swing and miss. Thanks for coming. Next hitter, please. He'll mix the slider in against lefties. He'll use it against righties sometimes. He's not really going to back foot you. He's really trying to get you to go on the changeup. But he doesn't have like the top rail swing and miss heater, you know? Like, he's not really trying to blow it by you. It is coming out. It's in 96, 97, because everyone does that now. But it isn't, you know, the peak Spencer Strider, Craig Kimbrell type stuff. Like, it's sinker change and the slider. This dude's got to start the All-Star game for the National League unless he, you know, starts throwing games or commits a crime or whatever. Like, the All-Star game is in Philadelphia and he's the best pitcher in the National League. And as good as the NL pitching has been, and we'll talk about that in a sec, this is his honor to lose, and it'll be really cool for a guy that was not a prospect, you know? Yeah. I mean, he was an afterthought. Yeah. He was filler. He was traded for Curtis Meade, who, you know, these were two guys who no one really thought highly of when they were traded for one another. Like, Curtis Meade was this, like, interesting Australian infielder, and Christopher Sanchez was this, like, high minors strike thrower, and then Meade becomes one of the best prospects in the sport, like top 50 prospect, and Sanchez does it, and it's like, oh, Rays fleeced another one. They got him. Not so fast, said Christopher Sanchez, and he's just gotten better and better every single season, added velocity, hard worker, really fun to watch on the mound. Like, the way that he oscillates between, like, laughing with Manny Machado after Machado flies out to the wall, you know, their teammates on WBC. Mm-hmm. And then, like, Machado gets back in the dugout, he comes set, bulldog again. Like, jungle cat.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he is prowling, he is intense. And being able to flip that switch between those two modes, I think, makes it a very enjoyable experience to watch him throw.
Christopher Sanchez in May. 39 innings, 25 hits, 0 runs, famously. Three walks, 45 strikeouts.
Famously.
That is so ridiculous. However, let me read you Jacob Mizorowski in May. 31 and a third innings, 11 hits. Just 11 hits. One run. No streak for Miz. Sorry.
Bum.
Six walks, 49 strikeouts. Okay. So he's got more strikeouts than Sanchez in eight fewer innings. This is one of the great pitcher of the month races of all time. But since no one cares about that award, let's zoom out a little bit farther and talk about
who
what is shaping
be?
Up to be a, I mean, I am really curious. I assume it will be Sanchez, but Miz, a heck of an effort.
He didn't allow a run.
He didn't allow a run. That's true. But Miz is really just, he's doing it right now. He is
doing it.
He looks as dominant as any pitcher that we've had in quite some time. Meanwhile, Shohei Ohtani threw another six no-hit innings the other night. He did allow a run in that game because his command was not good. He also is much farther behind when it comes to innings, which is the whole conversation when it comes to Ohtani and the Cy Young conversation. However, even though he is not quite qualified because he's only at 55 innings, he now is tied with Paul Skeens, who had another strong outing last night against the Cubs, is third in pitcher F4 among National League starters, behind only Sanchez and Mizorowski. Kyle Harrison has also been awesome. Chris Sale? Oh my God, Chris Sale was throwing harder than he'd been in like 7 years. Chris Sale's just going full, like Verlander, I guess, is really the only comp that I can think of, just like this version. I know he did finally win his Cy Young a couple years ago, but he looks unbelievable when we thought he was on the verge of retiring. So he's part of this conversation as well. He's up there. He's now up in the top five in innings pitched. We got a long way to go here. And that's not even to include some of the younger guys like Chase Burns, who have been terrific. Braxton Ashcraft's been awesome with Pittsburgh. I guess people will still kind of keep bringing Mason Miller into this conversation. But the problem is, if the field of starting pitchers is this strong, Mason Miller got
this
no
good.
Shot.
He's got no chance.
So, like, Mason Miller is
you
amazing.
Stayed in the AL, bro.
Right. What were you thinking? And you only would have had to deal with, Cam Schlittler, as we all expected. But yeah, and this is even like Yamamoto's like nowhere near this conversation, and it's not like he's having a bad year. So it's a heck of a race, and it'll be curious if you can you vote in the DC chapter? Can you vote at NL or AL? How does that work? Because I'm only going to be eligible for AL award voting. Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see. He's
DC,
not going to be able
Baltimore
to talk about
chapter.
It, but. Okay, yeah, DC Baltimore. So anyway, this is the case of an award race that I would be like so excited to vote for and also dreading because this is going to be a heck of a run.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, for me, it's really about who's in second, third, fourth, and fifth after Nolan McClain, my favorite pitcher in the league.
Jake, I hate to tell you this. since you've been gone, Nolan McClain trending in the wrong direction. In fact, his ERA is 4.40.
Not worried.
For Jake's beloved Nolan McClain. All right. We're going to take a break. When we return, it's Friday. We got some good, bad, and ugly stuff on the way. We're right back.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. It's Friday. Let's do the good, the bad, the ugly. One thing good, one thing bad, one thing bizarre, wonky, offbeat from the week that was. Jordan, can you please begin in Lawrence, Kansas?
Oh, what a treat it would be for me to start off this good, bad, ugly with something so good. It just made me smile.
Jordan, if you could be anywhere in the world this weekend, if you could be anywhere in the world this weekend, would you be in Lawrence, Kansas? I think there's an argument.
It's up there. Lawrence, Kansas, a place I've never been.
Oklahoma City, one.
Oklahoma City, for sure.
Lawrence, Kansas,
probably ahead of Lawrence, Kansas. But Lawrence is way up there. The Kansas Jayhawks are hosting a regional for the first time in school history. And there's so much with this that's just so cool. They won the Big 12 and they've they're head coach Dan Fitzgerald has rejuvenated the program. Jeff Passan wrote about them. Oh my God, like they're getting real attention. How sure. convenient that Jeff lives in Kansas City. I don't know if that happens if Jeff oh. lives in California, but I'm glad he wrote the story anyway, giving some love to a college baseball program. But my good specifically is not just that the Kansas Jayhawks are hosting a regional and everyone should watch Squeeze play this weekend and enjoy college baseball. It's that Rob Thompson, the fired, dismissed manager of the Philadelphia Phillies, is one of the honestly relatively few Kansas Jayhawks in former Kansas Jayhawks baseball players to go on to have a prolific professional career. And because Rob Thompson is no longer managing the Phillies, he's in Lawrence.
You don't gotta be at
getting
work.
Ready to watch.
He's not at work.
He's in Lawrence getting ready to watch these Jayhawks try and win a regional.
Yeah.
Which is just the coolest thing ever.
And
you know, what this could have been is, okay, he's still with the Phillies. And oh, here's a selfie video of Rob Thompson in the Phillies dugout being like, go Jayhawks, woo, good luck. This with him behind, like during BP, decked out in Kansas gear, just looking happier than he has in years. Just, oh, it warmed my heart. This was awesome.
I've talked Jayhawks baseball with Rob a handful of times. He cares. And it's not as if he lives in Kansas or is from Kansas. This dude is Canadian. And so it's not really like, oh, he lives nearby. It's not like Matt Holliday showing up to Oklahoma State for the regional or whatever, right? Like, right. Rob Thompson had to take probably multiple flights and a long drive to drag his tush to Lawrence for the regional. It is so cool. It is just a great reminder of the things that you miss, not us, well, us to an extent, but like the things that baseball people miss out on when they're doing this job because they are like, they don't get July 4th. So they don't get Memorial Days. I'm not crying for them, but there are slices of life that they don't get to experience. And this is an inversion of that, right? Rob Thompson getting to go to the regional, huzzah to him. Very, very happy for him.
So cool. I love everything about this and a lot of reasons to root for Kansas, but I'm excited to see where he's sitting. I guess that'd be another thing that I'm looking forward to this weekend. Is he right behind the dugout? Is he behind home? Is he in the suite? Is he out in the backyard? this is the cool thing about it. Let me just mention this quickly. So the Hoagland Ballpark, not a huge capacity, but to embrace this special circumstances, they've essentially replaced the left field wall with like a see-through fence so that you can just add hundreds more people to stand beyond the left field and just kind of hang out and, you know, grill and drink and just like,
it's great.
You know, get rowdy. So it's so
kick cool. It.
I hope he's out there just getting, you know, hammered. That'd be really funny.
Getting sloshed. Rob Thompson. Rob Thompson's
like chirping the left fielder.
Slammed. That's great. My good this week. We'll head out to the desert in Arizona, where one of the most improbable things in the history of our sport happened. A couple by the name of Alan and Mary Jane Johnson showed up to the Diamondbacks game on May 18th with tickets. Oops, wrong night. Tickets are not for that night. They're for the next night. So what did they do? And this is the best part of the story, Jordan. They bought tickets. They didn't say, oh, well, we have tickets for tomorrow. Let's just go home. No. They said, sign me up. I want in. And so they go into Chase Field and they sit in their seats and they catch a home run ball from Willy Adames. They end up somehow getting it signed by Willy Adames. Amazing. They go home and they still have those tickets for tomorrow. So what do they do? Jordan, they show up the next day again and they catch another home run ball by Willy Adames. I mean, this makes you believe in a higher power.
So it's even crazier than all of this because the weirdest thing about them getting the tickets, like the game where they were mistaken and they were like, okay, well, we'll go anyway, is that they seem to try and get seats very similar to where they already were going to be.
Right.
But not exactly the same. So strange that they were so committed to sitting in those very weird seats down the left field line, but whatever, you know, God bless him.
Go off.
But the craziest part to me is how they got the second home run ball. It did not land right in their lap the way the first one did.
No.
It took a ridiculous, bizarre ricochet that like bounced into, I guess, the bullpen. What's down the left field line there? And like just caromed over and landed right. It was impossible.
Yeah.
But Very good.
I'm also, good they didn't try what my wife and I pulled, you know, last week during we were in Milan and we went to the Duomo, like the big cathedral in the center of town. And we got tickets to go up to the roof, like walk around the roof, except there were no tickets available for that specific day. I bought tickets for the next day and just went up and pretended like I didn't, like I was a dumb American. It's like the guy is like, oh, these guys like these are for tomorrow. And I was like, oh, no.
Wait.
And he's like, it's OK. It's OK. Come on. I was like, thank you so much. Because like I didn't feel that bad about it because I did accidentally buy the tickets and I did not like I didn't steal anything. You know what I mean? Like I paid. And it wasn't overcrowded up there. Oh, no. Oh.
Let
me see the Diamondbacks.
Let me guess.
Does it work? It works at the Duomo. Does it work at Chase Field?
Well, and then to that, I was going to say, knowing your feelings about Chase Field, I'm assuming you enjoyed the Duomo more.
Yeah. It smelled less offensive than Chase Field. Yeah.
All right. Speaking of bad. Let's go to my bad. Chad Dallas. Had you heard of Chad Dallas before this tweet from Arden's Willing of Sportsnet?
No. I'll make a sent down in Dallas That's joke, okay. though, really quick. Okay, That's back okay. to you.
That's okay. Tweet from Arden's Willing at 3:54 p.m. yesterday. Very classic, you know, reporter tweet. When you're kind of in the clubhouse during media and you kind of are trying to figure out there's some roster moves coming and you notice, oh, from Arden, Chad Dallas has a locker in the Blue Jays clubhouse in Baltimore. For those unfamiliar, Chad Dallas, Blue Jays pitching prospect. I've been a fan for a while. I think he's pretty good. Anyway, Dylan Cease on the IL. Okay. Who's it going to be? Chad Dallas. Oh, great. Okay. Chad Dallas has a locker in the Blue Jays clubhouse in Baltimore. That's 3:54. So I'm like, great. Chad Dallas is coming up. That's great. Less than an hour later, update from Arden. The Chad Dallas nameplate has been removed.
Ba-ba-ba-bum.
Quote from John Schneider. I think that's a clubhouse mix-up in terms of communication. Nothing has been told to any players or anything like that. We travel with a lot of extra stuff, and this is obviously a time where we're making a lot of moves. This is just awkward and bad.
You know when you're
it seems like...
you know when your Chad Dallas nameplate accidentally ends up in the lock? I hate when that happens to me.
Now, this is clearly on, the Orioles visiting clubhouse attendance. Like, that is who screwed up here. But also someone with the Blue Jays had to have said something that led them in a direction that thought this was happening. It does still seem likely that Chad Dallas is going to pitch today, which is what it was for. But however this happened, why ever this happened, this is bad. Because this is Chad Dallas's major league debut, and this is not how we should be finding out that he's coming up to the big leagues. Is his nameplate showing up and then disappearing?
Good job on the reporting here, because the report did not say Chad Dallas is up. The report said Chad Dallas has a nameplate,
has a locker,
okay.
has a locker. That's true. And I don't know what I'm now wondering is like, was Chad Dallas in? Did he even make it to the building? Was he still in the hotel? Now, I will say, we're recording this early Friday morning. If Chad Dallas doesn't pitch this weekend, this is even more bad.
Mega bad. Uber bad.
But even if he does, something's wrong here. So I just, whatever. Oh, yeah. It's funny. It's a borderline ugly, but I'm going to give it a bad.
My bad. Also ugly. Bat dog injury. We got a bat dog injury. Jordan, as some people who've spent time in minor league baseball know, a lot of these teams, they got bat dogs. Reminds me of that show. Remember that show on Nickelodeon? Bat dog?
Oh, it took me a second.
Where
I wonder, half do bat? People... Yeah. No, that is... man, let's see. How long did that show last?
Minor league.
4 seasons. Whew, okay.
Minor league bat cat dog. It's actually the cat dog runs out to get the bat. Anyway, the Tulsa Drillers had keyword past tense, a bat dog. And this bat dog scampered out to get the bat, as is its job. The bat dog was just doing its job. Scampered out to go get a bat after Dodgers prospect Kendall George scored a run And in trying to avoid the bat dog, Kendall George suffered a left knee injury. Now, it doesn't seem like it's going to be season-ending surgery. The Tulsa Drillers bat dog program has been suspended. And I think that's unfortunate. Jordan, I'm not a dog guy. Not the biggest dog guy. Mm-hmm. But this bat dog, did this bat dog do anything wrong? Like, was this a poorly trained bat dog? Or is this just an unfortunate circumstance?
I think it's the latter. But it when you have something like this, you do have to be like, oh, wait a minute. Has this always been a bad idea?
There's animals running around.
It's like, wait, what? I don't know. I mean, we've seen this in person where some people love bat dogs. Enough people do it so that so many teams are doing this all the time. So that it's just become so common. It is an interesting situation, though. Like, hopefully Kendall George is fine.
I do think that
if he wasn't fine, it is reasonable would this actually
if they suspend
change?
The Tulsa Drillers bat dog. Like, okay, that sucks, but I think that's what we might have to do here. Mm. It should not suspend other bat dog programs around the game, in my opinion.
I think that's true. Or at least one more serious injury from that happening, I think. Hopefully not, but, you know, that's what I would say. Okay, let's go to Ugla. My Ugla is a text I received from my wife, who I love and appreciate so much. This was during the game on Wednesday night. I was at PNC Park for Cubs Pirates. I was in the press box. She was down as a spectator, enjoying the ball game as a regular fan. And she sent me this text. She noticed something happening in the ballpark, and she sent me this text. She said, "Do you see the growing crew of people in the upper deck twirling their shirts?"
Did you?
She said,
"Did you see
I've
them?
Been watching and laugh. I've been watching and laughing as it's grown from one guy to three to an army." This
she's not listed in the show.
Good. This is good and ugly, because this was my wife for the first time being exposed to the Tarps Off movement. Very
exposed.
Genuinely. Exposed is right. That's exactly the word.
Exposed.
I will say, though,
she was
this
exposed.
Was so funny because
they were exposing themselves. A lot of exposure.
This was a Cubs blowout. It was a quiet night at PNC. But in the latter innings, sure enough, in the upper deck, a group of some guys being dudes. Got this going again. And I bring this up because, listen, this has been going on everywhere since we first started talking about Tarps Off St. Louis, whatever. I will say, witnessing it in person and watching it grow in person, watching people run from around the stadium and join them, like, because I could watch it slowly grow, was truly hilarious. And the funniest part, though, which I had not ever thought about, but as she rightfully observed, is the game ends. And you watch all of them put their shirts back on very slowly and awkwardly and disperse.
Because you can't have your shirt on off outside the stadium.
Well, really, you could. You certainly could. But like there, even as they were down by however many runs, it was building all the way to last out. And then they were like, okay, well, time to go home. watching it grow in person was great. And I don't know how much longer this trend's going to last, but watching her discover it IRL was very funny and very ugly.
That's great. My ugly is very quick. We would be remiss if we did not mention that Bryce Harper brushed his teeth bizarrely. You've probably seen this already, but if you haven't, let me speak truth into your ears. Bryce Harper, great TikTok content creator. Never thought I would say that about him, but he's so genuinely himself on social media now in a way that leads to situations like this, where we learned that this man didn't really have a childhood, and maybe as a result, never learned how to do toothpaste. He put the toothpaste into his mouth and then like wetted the brush and then put the brush in his mouth to brush his teeth. He got roasted for this. It is a little weird, if not a lot weird. He almost does it like you would take a pill. Right? Like, it's like we do take pills this way. How yes. bad is this in your mind?
I think, is this very strange? And I have never seen anybody squeeze toothpaste into their mouth like this. Yes.
Sure.
Is this the most concerning thing that Bryce Harper is doing? No.
No. Way better than learned, the blood. I'm not looking at his
way
blood.
Way better than the blood.
If Bryce...
Way better than the raw milk. Like, this is strange, but like, whatever. Like, I don't think, and it's I don't great. Think this is like, it's okay. Let's kind of take, why is this gross? Because you're essentially eating toothpaste for a second.
You're subjecting like, your taste buds to toothpaste directly as a flavor and not as a necessary activity. I think is how I would describe yes. it.
Yeah.
But yeah, on the scale of things that concerned me about Bryce Harper's off the field health related conduct,
way down there.
Like, way did down he there. Know that this was weird when he posted it, or
clearly imagine, not?
Like, right. That's what's so interesting. Okay, I want to know, like, Bryce Harper's wife. Do you do this? Has he been doing this forever? Did you ever say,
yes.
"Hey, Bryce, that's not how this works." I do it this way.
We have some amazing reporting from Phillies Nation. Ty Daubert did this in San Diego. And this is the quote from Bryce Harper. Everyone's asked him, it's like, hey, dude, hey, you bro. Know people are reacting to this video of you putting toothpaste in your mouth? He said, quote, I guess about people getting the attention. It kind of happens when you post a little bit, right? And then he said, but yeah, I've done it forever. But this is the quote that really hits home about this and it speaks to just like Bryce Harper, the TikToker, that just makes me laugh so much because it's like Bryce Harper, one of the most famous baseball players in the world. He's so easy. Nobody is lacking Bryce Harper exposure. Quote, it asked me like, man, like, what do you think of all these people reacting to you, your weird toothpaste strategy? Quote, I mean, it's gone viral, so I'm happy about that. It always helps with my videos when it goes viral. So if that's what makes it go viral, then I'll take it.
Dude, you're Bryce
Harper. Honestly, it's like the version of like any baseball player afterwards, like starting a podcast because secretly they all also want to have a podcast. Apparently, it's like why you are
don't
so
go viral,
famous. Why do you need your
you know
TikTok
what went viral,
viral,
Bryce?
What
you know what went viral is when you took Robert Suarez backside into the seats in Game 5 of the NLCS in 2022. That went viral. If your goal is to go viral, like, stop, Bryce. However,
well, to be clear, Bryce Harper's having a great season.
What I'm
this
dude,
is
no,
not
no, no. What
distracting
I'm laughing at,
anything. Yeah,
it's no, it's not a bad thing. What I'm laughing at is Bryce. So Bryce posts this, right? And he's like sitting at home. He's on his phone. He's scrolling. Is he realizing, like, slowly, like, wait, do other people do this a different way? Like, people are just roasting him. He wasn't being like, check out this weird way I do my toothpaste, right? He was like.
He's
here's
thinking,
how I brush my teeth.
He's thinking, he thought it was just he's normal. Thinking, listen, this toothpaste is going to end up in my mouth at some point. Why am I wasting my time,
you know,
yeah.
squeezing it onto the brush?
I'm going to try. But it's just,
I'm going to give it a go. Oh,
man. Again, I'd much rather you give this a go than the other stuff. On that note, we are done.
No more blood.
we'll pass on the raw milk. Thank you for doing this episode with me, Jake, from Italy. I will be back on Monday and Wednesday without Mr. Mintz. Hopefully everyone enjoyed our episode with Jolly Olive on Wednesday. I had a great time.
It was great.
Enjoyable.
It was great.
I don't know if you listened to it, but it was good.
I did.
So we'll be back on Monday with some more special guest hosts. Jake will be back next Friday. Until then, enjoy yeah. Italy. Thank you to Andrew Hartz and Ingrid Rosas for producing. Any final words before you say goodbye and go to... sleep, go to dinner. I don't know what you're up to.
3:15 p.m. Gonna go drink some wine. That Pisa Tower, it'd be leaning. It's leaning.
Oh, it ain't a bit. Confirm.
Leaning. And there are a lot of people around the Leaning Tower Pisa with Yankee hats on. So I asked about Volpe and Caballero, as you know, is always the case when you travel internationally. Just so many people with thoughts on Max Fried's injury and how much of a bummer it is for Cy Young chances. And like, are they going to get burned for the Ryan Weathers trade? Like some of the prospects they gave up. So that was a big topic of conversation today in Pisa, near the tower that do be leaning. That's all for me. All right. As they say, yep. Arrivederci.
That is what they say. Enjoy Italy, Jake. Yes, sir. And everyone else, go watch softball, go watch college baseball, and we will talk to you on Monday. Bye.